domestic violence programs. And between the staff and the volunteers, you have a group of women, many of them have been battered, come out of traditional marriages, that sort of thing. And the monumental task for this year on that center is shifting the energy in the direction of an entirely different model, which I think she provides. That's something that is balanced. I've been watching this very concretely for the last year, this manifestation of the masculine through these particular women who are groping and moving and changing and shifting, with Roberta providing some kind of a model for them.
She uses a lot of feminine,
but she is remarkably balanced,
right.
Deeply balanced. Yeah. That's awesome in itself. I'm learning more about that all the time. Who Roberta is.
Mary's an awesome lady.
But these subtle transformations that are taking place at that level, you know, in a women's center, in a small town or a city or something like that, are part of the new fluid, the movement in a different direction. But it's going to have to build momentum, and that will take a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
I was glad that the Equal Rights Movement failed, because from what I understand in talking to a number of women, what it did was cause them to reflect upon the course of action that they had taken, and to reflect, it's like a course correction. Not that equal rights for women shouldn't eventuate, but the method and the tactics, just as you were pointing out, are in air. And there is a way to bring this through so that you don't legislate rights, but that you bring them through because there is a natural equality process. Many militant women, a woman, now I don't know whether she made a general statement to me or whether or not she had true information in this area, but she was stating that a number of the militant women began to let go of that and return to contemplative process, and moved into nature and moved back out of this, almost to renew through what they know to be very natural methods. And perhaps when it's ready again, it will have a different flavor and perhaps a different outcome. So.
It's part of the argument I've never really understood. I'm looking at it from this angle, because I've seen it so much in counseling families, where you'll have a very dominant masculine, you know, energy, and you'll have a very, on the opposite of the pole, you may have a very feminine, receptive female energy. And I've watched real hard, and what controls, where the real control within that circumstance comes from, and it's always the person that is the clearest. It doesn't matter where the energy is coming from, but the clear consciousness controls, whether that does it with feminine energy, with subtlety, with a certain degree of cunning. Doesn't make a bit of difference, because I've seen, you know, outrageously masculine individual that was totally controlled by a very clear feminine energy. I don't quite understand how the controlling factor, it seems to me the controlling factor always comes from the clarity of that consciousness.
Well, gosh, you're really raising a very difficult discernment, because I'm not sure whether or not this isn't Southern women, for instance, know how to run their men. Okay? They know how to run their men and make their men feel as if they're doing all sorts of things, but meanwhile, they're running everything and they know it. You know, when I'm working with them in workshops, all of this comes out, and I'm just astonished, you know, at another whole Southern society. It certainly isn't, you know, what you might think it to be. So I'm not sure if this hasn't been developed out of defense, you see, as a very cunning, your word is very good, a very cunning way to handle the male energy through not really necessarily a feminine process. In other words, perhaps we aren't really seeing a feminine process, we're just seeing another masculine process coming through a feminine vehicle.
Well, the Southern woman, using a cliche, is deceptive in a way. I mean, she's not out front.
No, but they're trained very early, and women are trained very early to be deceptive.
Yeah.
Okay. I think what we're talking about too, I think I feel like I caught what you were saying, is the difference between feminine wiles.
Exactly.
And femininity.
That's right. Yeah, that's
and exactly. That the Southern women are definitely wild, clever.
But not.
But that isn't femininity, not in the true sense of the word.
Yeah, but it's the downhill water situation, and the way that water works. And like, for instance, I know in working with really, really delinquent kids, the stronger the negativity in the individual, the easier it is to work with if you're aware of the situation. Mm-hmm. Because you can direct that strength. Without that strength, you can't bring anybody through. Without that intensity, people have a tendency to stay in a holding pattern no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. But it's the clarity about the nature of the circumstances that's the real power. That is the directional impetus.
Well, but you have to remember that you're speaking about clarity in the direction that you want it to go. Or that your rational, logical awareness is conceiving of what is right versus what is wrong.
No.
Are you sure, Jim?
Well, let me re-describe it. Maybe I'm not. No, my attitude in working with that kind of situation is not to direct it in any sense, mm-hmm. except to draw the thing out.
But
I'm not concerned about outcome in this case, or whether the person decides to go out and be a heavy criminal or what he does.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point. It's just that the energy's fixed and tight, mm-hmm. and the whole effort is merely just mm-hmm. to draw the thing out so that the person can look at it. Mm-hmm. Now maybe that's still the same thing.
Well, I'm looking at, that's a very when you're using the word clear, I see behind it a almost like a form and a structure that it's looking at. Whereas what she's talking about, what Diana's talking about, is so antithetical to our usual way of conversing that truly you have to move into telepathic rapport. In fact, telepathic rapport, when you take the mental, intellectual component out of it, is the closest thing I know of femininity, because it has nothing to do with logical, linear, deductive, rational, what should be's, and anything else. It's just there. It's there. It's global. It's global, and it doesn't dissect out. It's very interesting. It's just a knowing. You know what I mean, don't you, Diana?
I was enjoying your labors trying to get it out. I thought, oh, maybe he's going to be able to do it.
Well, the interesting part with it is I had never thought of it this way before, but I'm well aware that telepathic rapport, if you leave off the language, if you do not go into telepathy through language, but you go through almost a sensation and image, and it's a global, and I really will have to grasp for words because I haven't really formulated this idea to articulate it. But it's one of those things where you cannot logically state in language how it happens, but you can experience it. It's sort of like what you're going through about the processes of how to articulate something where there is no language structure to do it, nor can there be, because it's not a linguistic experience. Mm-hmm. It's not a linguistic experience. In fact, very little of life is linguistic. Just thought I'd send a little arrow over, Dr. Just a little one. Not a big cannon yet, just a little spear. No, this fascinates me when you look at how to get to the feminine process, particularly having to operate in a linguistic mode to communicate to people who cannot communicate in any other mode. They have no way of knowing what telepathic rapport is. Therefore, you have to use this thing called language. The minute you shift it to language, you have abstracted, and the full impact, you can only rely on their connotations to be able to pull the thing together again. And when you study communication, what they hear is very different than what you expressed. When you study telepathic rapport, what they got and what you represented is so accurate.
How do you study it?
It's, how do you study it? Through experience. Through experience. You cannot teach it by stating, it's an induction phenomenon. It's inductive. You cannot tell somebody, this is how you do it, this is what you're going to experience, and so on, but you can experience it. It's experiential. So, from that standpoint, then watching when mental telepathy comes in, where language, thought process is communicated between two people, you watch a diminishment. There's a diminution of the impact of telepathy. It has been isolated and compartmentalized into a specific ideation rather than that global. And I don't know why I'm doing this, because it is like that. It's just a sudden knowing.
Sounds like it's better not to talk about it.
Well, that's probably true, Jim, because the more you attempt to articulate it, the more its power seems to be diminished.
Yeah.
And corrupted in a sense, and for me anyway, it's twisted. But I like your thing of clarity. For me, that's a non-linguistic communication. You may mean something different, but when you said it, I immediately felt like the waters were clear, and so there was direct, like heart-to-heart contact without any of the, I'm not very linguistic, I'm not very verbal at all, so that's not a part of my makeup. But there are other things that interfere when I'm trying to communicate with somebody besides linguistics also, and that is just, the clarity seemed to do it for me.
Yeah.
When you say clarity, it's just like it got all the garbage out of the way, and you could just have clear water, and you'd be in this pool of clear, cool water, and just, you know, there you were.
Actually, in part, because language really gets difficult at the age that we're looking at, but in part, that clarity that I'm talking about, for instance, if you're with somebody that's really angry, you know, there's a sense of that that comes to you very clearly at a certain point in time. And the sense that's held at that point in time is that sense of that person's anger. And the desire is totally unconscious. I say in a real therapeutic process, there's no effort to try and be therapeutic. Yeah, but as soon as you start striving through somebody, you're already drifted off the screen. But still, the response inside you to that anger in that person is naturally to, because I think in any real therapeutic process, where the person, you're not trying to help anybody get comfortable, you know, you're not trying to help anybody see anything, quote, clearly so much as you are just trying to naturally intensify that situation so it can come out. I think anytime somebody really starts to go through a change, there's all kinds of wild things start to happen that don't have anything to do with rational process. And nobody really knows what they're doing, I don't think, at that point. But
of course, the negative emotion that muddies the waters, so to speak, or just ripples it, is one aspect. The other part is a positive emotion for me, in a sense, an attractive emotion also ripples it. And that, for me, is the hardest one to clear out. I mean, just to make it open without this, you know, attraction or this positive energy that I feel. The negative, why is that easier for me to identify and clear that out? I don't know.
You know, in the therapeutic process, the clarity that I was thinking about your ripples, your positive and negative ripples, and something underneath that. It seems to me that in the therapeutic process, when the change is going to take place, it's when the person has some kind of overall felt sense of that problem that they're having. And it may be manifested in anger, that needs to be kind of handled for it, it may be manifested in some other form. But you get an overall, total, felt, bodily, even bodily, perhaps energetically, sense of what it is. And when that comes in, then there's a possibility of making a shift. And in that shift, you feel a new kind of clarity coming in. You can watch this, and I know you've seen this many times in therapy process. You can watch somebody undergoing therapy and predict whether or not they're going to have any success in that therapy, depending upon how well they can get in contact with that overall global wisdom, which cannot ever be articulated, but which is the basis of a change.
Yeah, this is what interested me. I've been, at some degree, in conflict, watching, you know, a lot of New Age consciousness effort. Mm-hmm. It's incredible striving to try and change consciousness
mm-hmm.
through seminars, you know, groups, and all varying degrees. And even at its more subtle levels, it seems to me there's something that's being denied them right along the lines of this kind of feminine energy. I think there's a point that a lot of people are getting to now, this point in time, where there's a letting go of the contrived effort to change and recognition that everything is the teacher, that everything you enter into, that if you open up to a certain degree, you don't even have to look around. It comes to you.
That's the non-directed feminine, and it's not just...
Well, we're sort of caught in between a lot of this, I think.
It's wonderful to see it move into the, you know, masculine beings.
Well, I'd like to see it move into feminine beings, too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, everybody.
Yeah, but there aren't a lot of women who are feminine. It seems like the men are turning onto it more, in a way.
That's true.
I mean, we seem to be corrupting it a lot. I don't understand it exactly.
You know,
I think it's tied into the repression process, the distortion that's taking place within the feminine currently is out of this beginning to unleash. It's like a dam that's been built up. Initially, it will come through distorted and destructive.
Put them all up on the top.
Anything that's been dammed up.
All of them. There's fire in here. It's all right.
But I was just looking and tying into where, of course, in therapeutic work, oftentimes it's necessary to supply the negative energy. To supply an energy to fan the flame in that person, because whatever this is that's called therapy, which takes place inside of them, that has nothing to do with the therapist, other than maybe perhaps you're catalyzing in some way. But very few people will take that risk of putting in and fanning the flame. And when I've seen it happen, somebody who's just about, and I watch everybody rush in to try to make the water clear, you know, and quite to the contrary, that's all I need is a little more crisis, and it will happen.
That's what I was trying to say.
You ought to see the flammable fuel he has in his
fire. It's amazing. And I'll, you know, I'll watch people wring their hands and so on and so forth. And I said, now, I tell you, it'll happen. Just, you know.
But you know, one of the things you pointed out earlier, Brew, about the fact that when you are in a logical or a cognitive mode, and that's generally when you write, unless you do poetry or free thought, how difficult it is, and that's one of the reasons why I think that there are so many or so few feminine women, and Yogi was instrumental in pointing this out to me, because he's been encouraging me to write. And he gets on me and says, write. But when you write, you immediately move out of that mode.
That's right.
And so to be able to bring that through, in not only a clear sense of the word, but to carry that energy, that's a very difficult thing, and there's very few records or any kind of direction in that regard.
It could be
for anybody.
It could be that music and language, mathematics and so on, are purely masculine processes, that they are not feminine essence.
And
therefore, you cannot operate in a mode to try to make it be anything other than what it is. So there has to be, for instance, I can't wait until somebody comes along that can take sound and move it out of an entirely different principle than anything we've constructed so far, which is logical linear. You know what I mean? And how to handle it.
Similar to what you were talking about, that process going on in here.
So when he asked you to write, you watch what happens. Whenever I get around him, I can feel the focus come in. His tremendous power of induction to go into the logical linear. And he demands it. Now he's a lot less right now as he's sleeping. I can talk all about it. It won't matter. He's much less. There was almost a very powerful destructive energy that would come out of Dr. Wolf when he saw that you had looseness of association, or if you did not meet the demands of how he wanted to engage in a conversation with you. And so what I find when I get around him, I can activate it. I don't like it. I don't particularly care to speak that clearly and articulate that carefully. I would much prefer to meander in the conversation to let it take place. But that's an essential part of this also. And it's a wonderful to me when I to exercise that aspect. And I think that's what he's asking you to do, is to exercise it, to develop it, so that you merely have it as one of your tools, but certainly not the primary tool.
Yeah, not the primary tool.
Well, that's a hard one, though.
Yeah, well...
That's a tool that has a tendency used often enough to become...
It's very seductive because everybody's conditioned to communicate through it, but I think there are other ways of communicating.
It's the effective realm in the normal world.
No, there are much more effective ways.
But in terms of business and other things, with you and everybody else I know gets caught up in the time.
I'm not talking about business
things. That has a tendency to move people around quite a bit.
Are you?
Well, I don't know, they're all interesting questions, that's for sure. For me, it serves more as a balance because I'm so non-directed mentally, except when I place myself in that position on occasion, that to do something with the animus that's directed is a matter of discipline. It's more of a matter of balancing out because I'm so diffuse, you know.
Yeah, you can be on that side of the pole too.
And I really am. And so it's not going to capture me. It's more like I have to discipline myself to learn about it in a sense and to use it for a little while. And
it does eventually. It's just like my earlier fear of mathematics or taking particularly logical thinking a certain distance. I used to think of that as being such a cut and dry possibility. And not only through Dr. Wolf, but some other individuals that I've been exposed to in the past year who have encouraged me to press that mind as far as it can go, to take that logical thought as far as it can go, and then you will again burst forth into the diffuse. Mm-hmm. So it's like you can just stay in the diffuse and never develop that capacity to follow that line. But you find that if you do develop that capacity, it eventually breaks into the diffuse again.
It doesn't have to be an either or, it can be both and. At least for me, I have to have it both.
Yes, John.
Diffuse mind and
Dinner's ready.
Dinner's ready, Dr. Wolf. Are you not ready? This must be going to be a... Smokers at this end.
Smokers at this end.
Would you like, where would you like me to sit down? I'll be glad to sit. Maybe David can sit here or I'll.
Yes, that'd be fine.
Jazz aside.
Where are you going to sit?
I'm going to have to meet myself, right?
Oh,
that's not
girl.
Necessarily.
My little girl comes out after.
Father's daughter?
Right, John, some masterpiece. I can see that.
No,
100 feet long,
though. Okay. Okay. Brew and dry, but also.
That's it. Ourselves to truth.
We've got tuna fish sandwiches also, and cottage cheese and great beer.
Wonderful. This is fantastic.
Justin Dugan.
Do you like a drumstick, Yogi?
Like to work with exclusive groups like that, or by accident, or what?
One of these?
By design.
This is Black Sage for the next month's
Dr. Wolf? Oh, thank you.
Bust him.
Well, they know that dinner's going to be served. We should have enough. And they'll have two of them will at least have to sit on the counter.
Did you forget to take it all over?
It's such a vivid image.
When somebody finishes with the chicken, they can pass on the pork
man. Is there any conscious reason for choosing the all?
Dr. Wolf, my 6-year-old daughter met you last year, and she might remember, sent her love. She said, say hello to the wise man. And she still asks for your dinner prayer at our table. Yeah. She remembers you very well. She's a very unusual girl. Both the girls are very unusual. Yeah, and my younger niece, 20 months. They were both down here last year. The whole family came down. Really wonderful.
Sounds fascinating to me.
So they were all prepared ahead of time that it would be an all-in.
And working with Richard, I noticed he tried to balance out those images always. Mm-hmm.
And salt and pepper.
So I'm just leaving the table this way for the rest of the weekend.
But you want the jam and salt.
Thank you.
I'll pass that right back down that way. At Sac State in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. How long have you taught there?
I'll be starting my 17th year next month.
The what year?
17.
17?
Whoa. He's really
what
old.
You do? You just mumble that. You see?
You don't get this response, but somebody. I'm learning more about accommodating myself to that environment, trying to do what I really want to do. I think I'm doing a better job of it now, and maybe this year will be even better.
Do you have fairly good academic freedom?
Let's say I keep a certain kind of image I've been cultivating for 17 years.
Mm-hmm. Is it deception?
Is it deceptive? I think there's a lot of deception involved.
I just wanted to hear you say it. I know there is.
I know.
Yeah. It's fun to be honest here.
I've been working on that for a while.
Yeah. After all, I have a paragon. Virtue and honesty.
But I have a new outlet.
Accepted my workplace. I have.
The last year I started working with a group of former students doing transformational stuff. It's a lot like what Brew does, as a matter of fact. And that provided a nice outlet for some of my images. And then just this summer, I started on a professional basis with my first group up in the area. And they're all teachers in the school district that we're in, and they're all couples. And my wife is one of the members of that group. So I'm able to do very, very extensive transformational work, which allows me to
not feel so empty.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that I have to do in the classroom.
Your chicken is delicious, chicken. Now that it's summertime, I try to cook out there as often as we can. It's nice to sit out there away from the news.
Wonderful to be at the table with you again, Dr. Wolf.
Wonderful to have you and have these other people.
Beautiful group.
We're a little short on the pendulum, though.
I think it's fine. It's a good proportion.
That sounds like a very liberated remark to me.
There's three of us here.
That's my mode. Right. Funny with you guys.
In fact, I've been experiencing the visit is directly a lot of things we're talking about. Total inability to really to articulate, and I know I can't articulate in any as far as logical or linear thought process go. I haven't been caught in the mode, you know, and but experiencing directly a what I think is a feminine, you know, aspect of my beingness, and well, surprised because of all the stimulation in, you know, areas at hand or available that I would slip into the mode of awareness. But as Whitman said, he said, when the subtle air, the sense of the impalpable surrounds us and pervades us, I'm filled with an untold and untellable wisdom. I'm silent. I require nothing further. She a hold of my hand has completely satisfied me.
That's wonderful. That really captures that.
And you have a hard time articulating, right?
No, not usually.
It's beautiful.
I don't have a hard time articulating today. I just don't have any desire to. There's no real thought process to articulate. The conversation and the dynamics that are moving are carrying me, and I'm experiencing them. But surprisingly, I thought I would experience them more intellectually, you know, in salutes to the company I'm in, but it hasn't been that way at all. I'm experiencing it, I don't know if more directly would be a true term, but we're very feminine.
That's great. That's nice.
We've got to get some of the stories.
Want to
hear a story?
Voice change?
Yes!
Wow! Happens just like that. That's the time to tell the story?
Yeah, no, okay.
We'll save that for later, Joe. Why is it, do you think, that so many people that come up here to convention shift over, and I think, into their feeling side when it's, when, you know, Franklin represents so much stuff?
It's almost like it demands it. Whatever is being externalized will somehow be counterbalanced on another
thing. Although I think Franklin is.
I disagree today. In the space I've been in, I've found him there with me all day long.
Mm-hmm. Well,
when he falls asleep, I fall asleep. When he goes on, you know, wait.
But so many people that come to convention think, because, you know, having read his work and it's so largely intellectual, they expect that that's what convention is going to be, and it ends up so much of it is, you know, love, feeling, communication on that level.
Perhaps the convention's always been that way. Distinctly taken this time for the virus issues.
I've only been coming the last 5 or 6 years. When my kids were little, I couldn't come to convention time because I, you know, was kid occupied.
What courses are you handling?
So I don't know.
I'm still teaching just about everything in our catalog, but not all at the same time, of course.
That's amazing. How big is that?
I'll say that in my 20th year. But I think I get my most satisfaction from teaching medieval philosophy.
Medieval,
yes. And spending a lot of time with Plotinus. There's a great affinity between Plotinus and Franklin Wolfe. And I think and that adds a lot of richness.
We both are ashamed of the fact that we have animal bodies.
Yeah. But I put a lot of energy into a course of philosophy and literature, and also the courses in philosophy of religion and philosophy of science.
Yeah, those should be complimentary.
And I always have a lot of fun, get a lot of good response, and love what happens in an introductory philosophy class.
One introduction, of course, is history of philosophy. Mm-hmm. There's two different ways of approaching it. Introduction to philosophy and history of philosophy.
Mm-hmm. I do very little history of philosophy.
How did you spell it? Mm-hmm. How did you spell it? How was it spelled?
I always go back to Socrates. He's my mentor.
Yes.
That's where I start my students. Always with Socrates. Always with the midwife.
What is Socrates' name?
You've got another fellow Socrates
fan
here.
Right here.
I'm sitting next to me. I hear discourses on that occasionally.
That would be good for us, ladies.
But
the heck
is not always warm.
I'm not very
old,
what he looks like.
I just vaguely have an image of one of the busts.
Well, John, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's not over yet.
Oh, boy. Really? Delicious. I always thought I'd like to go back to teaching at the University of Yemen. I would think some of the private institutions would give you more freedom than the state.
Probably not. I have a lot of contact with colleagues in various disciplines and quite a variety of institutions, and it seems to be pretty much the same. You have to go outside of the traditional university, I think, to find a little more freedom, like the university without walls.
Yeah.
That's an entirely different context.
I taught 1 year at Sonoma State.
Oh, you did?
And enjoyed that, the part-time position. But I always thought at some point, a long time down the road, back. And I've often thought about that and wondered about in the meantime and in between times. Mm-hmm. Well, so it's interesting to find somebody that's doing it.
When were you at Sonoma?
Let's see, that would have been.
You'll do it through video.
Yeah, computers.
How do you do it through video?
Through video.
Wideband. It's enormous.
It is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are two professors. Professor Sabin.
Prostitutes.
I don't recall the number, the name of the other teacher. We had the history of philosophy, the ethics.
It's not necessary. That's a strong word to use.
There was logic, of course. Seminar, and that was it. Then when I graduated, they knew I was coming back for first graduate year. Sabin said to me that if I would take it, he put in a course on the Critique of Pure Reason. I said I would. Yeah, I was the only student.
Magnificent opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Did you criticize Pure Reason, Dr. Wolf?
Did he criticize?
Did you? Was it a course on the Critique of Pure Reason?
Yes, but of course, he was using the word critique.
I know.
Not in an adverse way. Right. It could be positive or negative, but it'd be limiting or determining. What were the real resources of reason? That's the problem he was facing. So it's as much positive as negative, as far as I go. But the final conclusion is sensations without concepts are blind. Concepts without sense and sensations are empty. That's one of his final conclusions. Now there's a little entrance of something else permitted in the language that he uses in that area, and I don't remember it now, that there was another part. He left the door open to another possibility. That possibility is what I think I have contributed mm-hmm. to, mm-hmm. namely interceptualism.
Mm-hmm. You're quite right.
Yeah.
I mean, Kant really did his work there in delimiting the relatively narrow but extremely rich area of reason, and then everything else that's outside, which is infinite. He really was making a negative case, as it were, by examining reason, a negative case for the noumena, mm-hmm. which is the domain that you have mm-hmm. entered into. So
yeah, he left the door open for
it. That he did.
And the most valuable discipline for a would-be philosopher is the critique of pure reason. But it's rough.
Mm-hmm. Even rougher than reading your first book for the first time.
Oh, and I thought I would...
You write so much better.
Oh, I guess, of course. And he thought for 12 years and then wrote in five months. Mm-hmm. Too much of a rush in writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With no editing.
Yeah. No, there is the criticism of a certain carelessness mm-hmm. in formulation. There are not so much carelessness as too much rush.
Are you doing video work
But if I were to pick one man out of the West as the philosopher, that would be William Kant. I remember Thurston spoke of him virtually that way. Say, as Kuru, this man is. It has been rumored that he originally was Pythagoras. I had an opportunity through a channel to speak to him. I asked him if that was really true. He said, yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Now he traveled, now this is about 600 BC.
Mm-hmm.
He traveled a great deal, he traveled into Egypt. And he may very well have traveled east and may have met the Buddha sort of because he seems to have been contemporary.
That's Pythagoras who's
yes.
thinking.
Yeah.
Do you think that he actually formulated some of the mathematical laws, or do you think that he actually was instructed by the Egyptians?
Well, on mathematics, his great contribution was conceptual proof. But prior to that, mathematics had been treated more or less as isolated, almost empirical problems. He brought in conceptual proof and the systematic possibilities that developed out of that. In one way, it's the beginning point of Western mathematics, is with Pythagoras. That makes him a very important man, not only philosophically, but also mathematically, mm-hmm. and in the mystic sense, too. His school at Crotona was really a mystical school.
He had an extraordinary sense of harmony at a lot of different levels, and that's one of the reasons why I moved into a totally conceptual level, because you could achieve balance and harmony there that you could not achieve in that theory and book. Yeah, remarkable figure.
He's one of the great guys. If I were to rate any man's spirit, Plato might be classical Greeks, it would be Pythagoras.
And Plato got a lot of his stuff from Pythagoras.
But I'm a great Plato's admirer. And I'm not selfish, don't feel so much about Aristotle. There's one thing where I disagree with Aristotle. The psyche and the soma are separate. Inseparable. Mm-hmm. Which would imply that when the soma falls, the psyche must fall. Plato did not teach us.
No, not at all. Yeah.
The Pythagoras?
Aristotle
stated psyche soma are
inseparable.
Plato held they were separable.
Pretty full blown reincarnation doctrine is Pythagoras.
Documentation that we've had of any magnitude of somebody that